1812. The Emperor Napoleon is at the height of his power. France dominates the whole of Europe, apart from the Iberian Peninsula, where French troops are getting a very bloody nose. And Britain. To bring Britain to its knees, back in 1806, Napoleon had ordered a European trade embargo against his number one enemy. But the Russian Tsar Alexander I refuses to comply. That is not something Napoleon can accept. He assembles an army of more than 500,000 men from all over Europe, about 9,000 of them Swiss.
In 1 month we shall be in Moscow. Within 6 weeks we shall have peace.
Napoleon knows how to inspire his troops.
The Emperor Napoleon had our regiment pass in review. He informed us by a proclamation that the Russians were our enemies, but that we should soon be victorious over them.
When the review was over, we marched past the Emperor with hurrahs, hoping that we should shortly be triumphing over the might of Russia.
Alexander has other ideas. He's not out for war, but he's ready for it if it comes. And he knows already how it can be won.
We shall let our climate, our winter, wage the war for us. I will not draw sword first, but I shall sheathe it last. Sooner would I retreat to Kamchatka than yield a province, or put my signature to a peace made in my conquered capital.
The Grande Armée sets off for Moscow in March. June the 24th, the army crosses the river Niemen into Russian territory. But instead of fighting, the Russians, under Field Marshal Mikhail Kutuzov, withdraw. And withdraw. And withdraw. But they destroy or take away everything in their path. 22-year-old Katerina Paya of Villisau in Canton Lucerne is one of the thousands of camp followers. She's accompanied her husband Heinrich, a member of the band of the 2nd Swiss Regiment. Both, incidentally, make it home. Heinrich dies in 1837. Katerina lives on till 1876, dying aged 86.
My destiny took me into these wastelands full of misery and horror. Instead of towns and villages, we found only piles of ashes showing where they had once stood. The Russians had laid waste to the entire plain. The corn had been reaped, the forests cut down, the villages burned. There was nothing to give the horses.
The 4 Swiss regiments remained stationed in and around Polotsk, about 500 kilometres west of Moscow. They have their first serious encounter with the enemy on August the 17th and 18th.
Just as the Russian cavalry was getting the better of some French battalions, the Swiss managed to re-establish order, thanks to their sang-froid and their courage.
The fighting only came to an end at nightfall on the 18th, with a total defeat of the Russians, from whom we seized a lot of cannons and ammunition. They abandoned the field in headlong flight, leaving behind them numerous dead and wounded.
Skirmishes continue for the next 2 months, but already the soldiers are weakened by illness and hunger, and morale is low.
When we have to go onto the ramparts, we climb up on all fours. Our legs can no longer support us. Cramps stop us sleeping. Everything, absolutely everything, has been taken away. I live off gruel, and even then I don't eat every day. But I drink a lot of water, which I get from the river.
Most of our soldiers are marauding, and then they fall into the hands of the Cossacks, while others are deserting, either to the enemy or to other units. It grieves me to say that our Swiss regiments are doing themselves no credit.
Meanwhile, the main body of the army is marching east, heading for Moscow. On September the 7th, the Battle of Borodino, the one great pitched battle of the whole campaign, leaves more than 70,000 dead. But the outcome is inconclusive. The Swiss are not involved. September the 14th, the French enter Moscow with about 90,000 men. They expect to find fresh supplies, but the city has been largely abandoned. During the 5 weeks in which they stay, another 12,000 reinforcements join them. But many die, whether from wounds or from illness. Typhus takes its toll in the unusually warm Moscow autumn. And Tsar Alexander refuses to negotiate. With winter looming, Napoleon has no choice. On October the 19th, he starts on the long retreat. The temperature has fallen to zero. At around the same time, the Swiss regiments back in Polotsk engage again with the Russians. Another 1,000 Swiss recruits have just joined them. Of the 9,000 or so Swiss troops who set off for Russia 7 months earlier, just under 3,000 are still capable of fighting. 5,000 are already lost, dead, sick, or simply disappeared. The fighting is fierce, despite the superiority of the Russian forces. It dies down at nightfall, only to start again equally fiercely the next day. At one point, on the 18th of October, the Swiss advance too far and are surrounded by 15,000 Russians. They're forced to retreat to avoid being massacred. They withstand two Russian charges and manage to withdraw for 400 or 500 paces.
But the third attack was a massacre. Men dropped like rain.
One of those injured is Jean-Pierre Maillard of Vevey, when a bullet goes through the lower part of his body. A French surgeon treats the wound, and he survives to tell the tale.
When the operation was over, which was not easy and which gave me quite some pain, I shouted, "Long live the Emperor!" And the people there started to laugh.
The losses are indeed horrendous. In a single hour on the 18th of October, the 1st Swiss Regiment alone loses 600 men and 20 officers. Another Swiss, Henri Bleuler, later taken prisoner at Berezina, describes the defence of the bridge in Polotsk on the 19th and 20th of October.
The fighting lasted 10 hours without a break, and I can say my regiment demonstrated the bravery and stubbornness which has always been characteristic of Swiss troops. The most terrible artillery fire, the burning of the entire town, the presence of several enemy columns in the town did not frighten my brave Swiss for a single instant, and at no moment did things break down in confusion. The Marshal de Saint-Cyr did me the honour of complaining that the Swiss troops were too brave and that when they were fighting, it was impossible to separate them from the enemy.
Polotsk is abandoned on the 20th. Of all the troops involved, the Swiss have taken a particularly heavy battering. The four regiments are reduced to a mere 2,000 men. The further withdrawal is the stuff of nightmares. The temperature plummets. On November the 9th, it's minus 10 Celsius. On the 14th, it's minus 25. The retreating army is in rags. It is ill and hungry. It's passing through hostile country, constantly harried by the Russians, whom the weakened troops are in no real position to fight off.
It was quite easy to prepare a horse steak. If you had a lump of meat from a dead animal, you just stuck it on something sharp, like a dagger or bayonet, and held it over the fire, with no salt, fat, or spice, because we didn't have any of those. The heat made the sick flesh quite disgusting. It would drip a yellow juice like pus, until it gradually burned to a cinder, and then you'd eat it greedily.
Finding food is one thing. Cooking it is another.
My greatest treasure throughout the retreat was an iron pot, which never left me. Many men had not been given any cooking utensils, or had lost them. Anyone who had a little bit of food was glad to share with someone who gave him the chance to cook it, and I often owed it to my pot that I got what was then regarded as a good meal. In other words, a decent amount of gruel.
Such is the army that starts arriving at the Berezina River on November the 21st. After a thaw, the temperature has dropped again, but the river has not had time to refreeze. The Russians have destroyed the bridge. The trap is closing. This is where Napoleon will surely be captured. But the French have a stroke of luck. They discover a ford at Studianka. And General Jean-Baptiste Eble of the engineering troops has disobeyed orders and not destroyed the equipment needed to build pontoon bridges. Working at night to keep out of view of the Russians, 300 of his men work feverishly, many of them neck deep in the freezing water, to build two bridges, one for the infantry, one for the artillery, getting the timber by dismantling the wooden houses of the nearby village. Few survive, but the bridges are ready by November the 26th, and the crossing starts in the early afternoon. Swiss troops form part of the corps that is the first to go over.
When it was our turn to advance, as we stopped near the bridge, we heard the Emperor speaking to General Merle.
General, are you pleased with the Swiss?
Yes, sire. If the Swiss attacked as strongly as they know how to defend, your Majesty will be pleased with them.
Yes, I know. They are good men.
They cross early because they have a tough task. To guard the western approach, to prevent the Russians, once they realise that the French have outwitted them, from getting to the bridges and cutting the army off. It takes 3 days for the army to get across. Napoleon himself goes over on November the 27th. And throughout that time, in temperatures that are always below minus 20, the Swiss are holding the Russians at bay. The so-called Berezina song is part of the story, a song of hope for all those overburdened with care. In seiner Preise,
In the morning of the 28th of November, there was some light snow. I was walking up and down the road with Major Blattmann, and he reminded me of the song Unser Leben gleich der Reise, that I used to sing a lot, and asked me to sing it again. When I finished, I heard a long sigh. Yes, Legler, it's very true. Those are wonderful words. Other officers soon joined us, and the morning hour was spent singing and talking. Suddenly, a cannonball flew close over our heads with a hellish noise. An orderly rushed up. The line has been attacked. There was murderous fire on both sides. Many officers were wounded and several killed. Our Major Blattmann was one of them. A bullet went through his brain.
Everywhere there was blood trodden into the snow. As I loaded my gun, I saw a Russian taking aim at me. I said, "By God, if you miss me, I won't miss you." He fired. I didn't hear the bullet. I leant against a small tree. Fire! I saw a man fall. You start to think about things. You no longer dare to look to right or to left for fear that your friend will no longer be there. To get to the bridges, they will have to go over us, crush us to the last man. And we shouted, "Vive l'Empereur!" We didn't feel the cold.
Once all the troops are across, Eble gives the order to burn the bridges to hamper the pursuing Russians. Thousands of stragglers are left on the wrong side. Few survive. Of the 1,300 Swiss fighting at Berezina, 300 are left. But the trials are not over. The retreat continues. The cold gets even colder. Control breaks down.
Some men wept. Some appeared numb. There were many who behaved like madmen, especially when they saw a good fire.
In the evening, we often looked for corpses that had gone stiff. Then we'd drag them over to the fire and lie on them so as to avoid being in direct contact with the snow.
What is left of the Swiss troops reach Vilnius on December the 8th. The city is full of dying men. It falls to the Russians on December the 10th. The survivors struggle on. Even when they cross the Niemen, the river that marks the border, they're still pursued by the Russians. In rags, covered in lice, they press on westwards. Many suffer from frostbite. The only solution is amputation. Even when it's only a few toes, it's a memorable experience.
44 years have passed since then, but I can still hear the piercing noise which ran through all my nerves, for chloroform had not been invented.
Napoleon, meanwhile, seeing that there is nothing more for him to do in Russia, has returned to Paris. It's in connection with this debacle, in which he lost 95% of his army, that he makes one of his most famous remarks.
It is but one step from the sublime to the ridiculous.